Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. We've given Silicon Valley's tech giants, Facebook, Google, Amazon, Apple, a whole lot of access to, control over sometimes, much of our lives, our data, our interactions, our news flow, what we see and learn and hear and communicate and buy. And they've enjoyed little government oversight. But in the wake of the 2016 election and Russia's online political ad buys, there are new calls in Congress to regulate in the digital realm, to require disclosure about online political ads, and maybe more. This hour On Point, is it time to rein in the tech giants? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you think we need to regulate the lords of technology? Do you want more transparency, disclosure, or should they be free to go their own way? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. The heat has been high since the news came out about those ads that came with the Russian purchases, political ads in 2016. Earlier this month, in an interview with Axios, executive editor Mike Allen, Facebook chief operating officer Sheryl Sandberg talked about the 2016 election.
Things happened on our platform in this election that should not have happened, especially and very troubling, foreign interference in a democratic election. And we know that we have a responsibility to do everything we can to prevent this kind of abuse.
But Facebook knowing that or asserting that it knows that may not be enough for Capitol Hill now. Last week, here's Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota at a press conference announcing the Honest Ads Act. Three senators, Klobuchar, Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, John McCain, Republican Arizona, sponsoring this. Here was Klobuchar.
Russia will keep trying to divide our country, and worse than that, we may even have other foreign interests trying to divide our country. They've tried it once, and they will do it again. That's why we've introduced this bill. Americans deserve to know who's paying for the online ads.
And it's aimed right at Silicon Valley. Here she was with more of what's at stake. Klobuchar.
Our entire democracy was founded on the simple idea that the people in our country should be self-governing. We don't want other governments influencing us. And now, 240 years later, our democracy is at risk. Russia attacked our elections, and they and other foreign powers and interests will continue to divide our country if we don't act now.
The Russian interference has a lot of people's attention, and that the energy of that now being turned towards some Silicon Valley giants. Joining me first today from Washington is Nancy Scola, senior technology and policy reporter for Politico. Nancy Scola, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What is proposed in this legislation, Nancy?
So the way that the lawmakers describe this bill is that it's a leveling of the playing field between traditional media, radio, television, that sort of thing, newspapers, and internet ads. So the same sort of disclosure that you might have on an online ad, on an ad on in a newspaper or on television where it says paid for by candidate X or paid for by the Americans for freedom of such and such would have to appear on the online ads in the same way.
So to date, that's not required with political ads that appear online. Why not?
It's not. The trickier is that the campaign finance laws predate the rise of social media, so they did not anticipate the sort of Facebook ads and Google ads that we saw during this election.
Have the Silicon Valley giants been working to keep this out of the regulated realm?
So the important episode that happened in this whole debate was back in 2011, when the Federal Elections Commission didn't have rules about what sort of disclaimers had to appear on social media, and some of the big tech companies went to the FEC and asked for an opinion on what sort of disclaimers they need to have. Of course, they were mostly of the position that they didn't need to have disclaimers, but they wanted a little bit of settled law on the topic, so they asked the FEC. The FEC, in particular on Facebook's request, Facebook asked for an exemption from these laws, the same sort of exemptions that apply for pens that candidates give out in the middle of campaigns, they're too small to require disclosure. Skywriting, it's too impractical to require disclosure on that, saying who paid for that advertising. So Facebook said, we want the same sort of exemption. The FEC couldn't come up with an opinion, so they pretty much left it in the hands of companies like Facebook.
So, their argument is our little ads online are just too physically tiny for us to add disclosure about who's paying for them?
It's that in part. It's maybe not as ridiculous as it sounds on its face, because what Facebook was arguing back in 2011 was that Facebook was just sort of emerging as a platform by which people were discussing topics like elections campaigns, just, you know, big political issues. And the argument was that it's moving so quickly, we're trying to adapt to the way that people are using this platform to discuss politics, that we don't want to put rules in place before we really know how people are going to be discussing politics on our platform. So it sort of fits into the broader argument of we don't want to step in and regulate innovation when it's really getting started, because that can have a chilling effect, discouraging people from trying things out on the internet, which is, you know, worked so well, but it sort of led to the flourishing of the internet era has been that these companies don't really have a whole lot of restrictions on them when they get started.
So the Federal Election Commission then justifying that so-called internet exemption rule by saying that the internet, calling it a unique and evolving mode of mass communication and political speech that is distinct from other media in a manner that warrants a restrained regulatory approach. Are members of Congress still buying that perspective, Nancy?
No, I think the time has run out on that argument. I think, as you mentioned, the attention being paid to the ads that seem to have been placed by Russian actors has taken the momentum out from behind Facebook's argument that it needs that it should be free to sort of do what it wants. And I think this is the moment. You know, people, you mentioned Senator John McCain is a sponsor of this new piece of legislation. He's been pushing for this sort of campaign finance reform for years. This is sort of, you know, they're striking while the iron is hot, given that Russia's so much in the news, to try to get a change pushed through that they've been wanting to see for a long time.
And what's the reaction of these big companies, the big tech companies? I mean, I'm looking at their latest reports on lobbying money spent, and they're in there very strongly. Just in a single quarter, most recently, Google spending more than $4 million lobbying in Washington, Facebook almost $3 million. I mean, even Twitter with a little bit in there. This big money they're pushing around.
Well, the thinking right at the moment is that they're probably not going to get out of this whole Russia investigation situation without any sort of regulation. This bill, the Honest Ads Act, requires a minimal amount of disclosure. This might be regulation they can live with, and it might also satisfy the need for lawmakers to regulate. So this might be something that they might be willing to entertain. And they have been engaged in the crafting of the proposals so far. So they haven't sort of, you know, traditionally they kind of reject the idea of regulation, and it's, you know, as soon as it is sort of launched into little political discourse, here they've been a little bit more willing to discuss the topic.
What about the bigger picture here of people sitting back and saying, wait a minute, these are very grown-up companies now with a whole lot of influence and a whole lot of money and a kind of ubiquity? We hear suddenly people talking, Nancy, about comparing them to utilities and saying they need really much more thorough oversight regulation.
Yeah, which is an argument that has developed remarkably quickly. I remember we started writing a bit about it this summer. I think in August we had a story saying, okay, you know, both Democrats and Republicans are starting to entertain the idea of regulating these big tech companies. And at the time, people thought, you know, that seems a little bit far-fetched. And fast forward to just a few months, and it seems to be everywhere, this discussion of there needs to be rules on these platforms. They're just too big, as you mentioned, just too ubiquitous, just too powerful. And the remarkable thing is that I think you referenced this idea of the lords of technology. That's a phrase that Steve Bannon has been using as sort of, you know, the very far right of the political discourse. But you hear the same sort of talk on the very far left of the political discourse. So there seems to be a coalescing. It seems to be the one thing that people in American political life can agree on right now, is that we need to crack down on some of these big tech companies.
People reconsidering exactly how all this works and the sort of unmonitored quality of what's grown into very, very big business with political ramifications. Nancy Scola covers all of it for Politico. Nancy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Here was President Trump. This was yesterday in an interview with Maria Bartiromo on Fox News, talking about whether or not he thought tech companies should be more regulated.
Some people talk about freedom, and other people talk about we want to know who's taking ads or doing whatever. And I would imagine something's going to come down along the line like we're doing right now for regular, you know, whether it's commercial or not, for a normal broadcast company. It'll be very interesting to see. You know, that's an argument that's happening right now. Okay. It'll be very interesting to see what. There are two very distinct views on that. I can go, honestly, I can go either way on it.
President can go either way on it. Francis Franklin Foer joins us right now. Longtime former editor for The New Republic, in interesting circumstances that we will talk about, and author of the compelling new book, World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. Franklin Foer, welcome back to On Point. It's been a long time. Thanks for being with us.
A pleasure.
You've got a big thesis, and we will explore it, but look at just this Honest Ads Act for a moment. Do you think that the big players here, in particular Facebook, Google, should face the same kind of disclosure requirements that newspapers, television, radio do when it comes to political ads in this country?
It seems like a no-brainer to me. I mean, this is really just a question of taking the internet, which has been treated in this fairly exceptional sort of way, where it's existed outside some of the rules that we've applied to other sectors of the economy, and we've reached a point where it just seems obvious that you would treat the internet in the same sort of way that you would treat other broadcast mediums.
But you know these companies, and we'll look at it, but they say, we're different. We've got a bigger mission here. Don't start throwing those, you know, Lilliputian threads over us. You'll tie down Gulliver and we won't innovate.
Right. Well, they wanted space for innovation. And you know who innovated? The Russians. And it had tremendous consequences for our democracy. And so I think that they've shifted to a space where the zeitgeist has started to turn against them. And it's turned so quickly. When I started working on this subject a couple of years back, people looked at me funny because the companies had so much prestige. But this election has caused us to start to reconsider some of the fundamental questions about the quality of information that that flows to our citizens. And once we started to think about Facebook, we started to reconsider the political power that these companies are able to exert simply because so much of the public square happens in realms that they control.
And now they are, in part at least, in the hot seat. Facebook's general counsel, Colin Stretch, will be testifying before House and Senate Intelligence Committees. Open hearings November 1st, part of this congressional investigation into Russia's use of technology to try to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. That's a Facebook spokesman telling NBC News. Franklin Foer's new book is World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Washington weighing whether to rein in Silicon Valley tech giants, Facebook, Google, and beyond, on anonymous political advertising, and maybe one day more, maybe much more than that, asking, are the tech giants running too much of our lives and minds these days, unmonitored? You can join us this hour. Are you worried about the role of Facebook and more in our elections? Should we know as much about who's paying for political ads online as we do on TV and radio? Do you have bigger concerns about how the tech giants are framing our lives, taking over? And do the tech giants need more regulation, more oversight, to be treated like powerful utilities in some ways? Franklin Foer is with us. He was editor of The New Republic. He was national correspondent for The Atlantic. He's out with a big new book. It's called World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. He goes way beyond thinking about political ads. Goes at the way these companies have portrayed themselves and honestly the way many of us have seen them for a long time. It's still out there. This was a little bit of Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google, at the Davos World Economic Forum in January, describing what he hopes Google and technology's role in society will be.
I would hope that as some of the, you know, maybe more mundane tasks are alleviated through technology, that people find more and more creative and meaningful ways to spend their time.
Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google. And that's a view that's been out there for a long time. These companies will help get a lot of mundane stuff out of the way, and people will thrive. Franklin Foer is asking big questions about that. In Washington, they're just looking at, well, wait a minute, these political ads, how do we rein them in online or keep track of them as we have offline? This was Democratic Senator Mark Warner of Virginia on NPR's All Things Considered last week. And you can hear him wrestling with this. He doesn't want to get in the way of innovation, but he wants to, with a light touch, he says, know what's going on.
What we've tried to do is a very light touch. We don't want to slow down innovation. We don't want to slow down individuals' willingness to use the internet or use these social media platforms. But in an era where $1.4 billion was spent on political advertising in the 2016 campaigns, and that number's only going to go up, there needs to be equality between traditional radio and broadcast and social media and internet.
Senator Mark Warner, Franklin Foer is with us from Washington. Franklin Foer, you know, why would these companies resist this kind of oversight? So I guess it's sort of shaping up to resist it pretty hard. Why?
Well, these companies were born at a time when the government tended to take a light footprint when it came to all of their activities. And we treated the internet as if it was a different sort of beast in human history. And in fact, in many ways, it was a very different sort of platform, means of communication, et cetera. But if you look at it, at first, we didn't require that these companies pay sales tax if they were selling goods across state lines, even though we required that of bricks and mortar companies that were shipping goods in that sort of way. And that kind of broadly reflected the zeitgeist and broadly reflected the paradigm which we applied to these companies. And suddenly you say, whoa, we need to take a different approach. You know, when it comes to these ads, we need to treat these companies in precisely the same sort of way that we treat TV or newspapers or radio. And that opens the door. And also, it's pretty clearly that the frustrations that are felt with the ads themselves are reflective of a broader frustration that doesn't really exist at a mass level. But if you look at cultural elites as well as political elites, there's this nagging sense that these companies have become too powerful in too many different realms, and that we need to start to consider novel solutions for them.
You've got a much bigger take than just political ads. But, you know, the reason there wasn't a sales tax, in part, it was difficult at first, but also people thought this is the future and we don't want to step on it with regulation. And I mean, the United States did become the global leader in internet innovation for a long time. Is that still not a threat, Franklin, if government gets involved here in oversight?
Of course. I mean, we need to weigh the cost and balances of whatever regulation we impose. But I think that the moment has come when we need to think about rules for these companies. An analogy. So when automobiles were invented, we let them drive around. They were an incredible innovation, of course. They allowed us to get from point A to point B much faster than anything we'd had before. But they also caused crashes and there was chaos on the roads. And so we tried to harness this technology for human aims. So we created speed limits, we created stop signs, we required safety belts and fuel efficiency standards. And so this environment has allowed for incredible things to come about. Google is one of the greatest accomplishments of human engineering. I mean, who can deny the beauty and the wonders of the iPhone? And I don't think we need to say that we want to throw these things into the ocean, but we need to find ways to harness them so that they serve human ends.
And they're not going after, with this legislation anyway, every little company here. It's platforms with 50 million or more unique monthly users. This is from CNBC, would have to keep a public database of political ads, and the companies would have to make, quote, reasonable efforts to prevent foreign nations from interfering with U.S. elections through ads. Franklin Foer has a bigger call still, and we'll look at that. But right on this issue, Adam in Springfield, Illinois, thank you for calling, Adam. You're on with Franklin Foer.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think?
The Yeah, I was just calling regarding the issue of these political ads, and my thoughts are, really it needs to be something that's looked at extremely closely in regards to regulation. One of the, primary concerns, at least in my view, is targeted ads to populations, during the election cycles here that, really it seems you can make a huge difference with a potentially small amount of money. And, of what limited information we know about this previous election, it does appear pretty clearly that there was outside influence, at least in terms of money from potential Russia, potentially elsewhere.
Yeah, so you want to know whether it's Facebook and Google or, the newspaper, and we've got it, Adam. I appreciate your call. Omaha, Nebraska. Rich, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I in listening to the program, I can't help think that, what's trying to be attempted in Washington for disclosure of who's paying what falls very, very short of what is actually happening in the country and what has happened to our country, especially during the elections. The way I see it is that our democracy is under attack, and we need what I believe is strong legislation when it comes to ethics. If a company or a political campaign or somebody who is running for office purposely says things to deceive the American public, there should be an accounting. There should be a punishment for that. There should be a fine for that. And then there should even be possibly jail time for that. We need to bring honesty and truth back into advertising, into political campaigning, into everything. It's too easy to deceive people these days. They don't look beyond their nose to find out, what is true and what's not true. So we really need to put... Go ahead.
We've got it, and I appreciate your perspective on that as well, and I want to put it to Franklin Foer, if I may. Franklin, I mean, you're right. You're pretty tough on these companies in all kinds of terms. Just on this front, you say Facebook and Google have created a world where the old boundaries between fact and falsehood have eroded, where misinformation spreads virally. Is that endemic to the structure of these companies? Can they be regulated in a way that that's not the case, Franklin?
I'm afraid it is somewhat endemic to these companies. And what we saw during the campaign, I think, reflects the way in which they've created these systems where everything is highly commoditized. So if you were to flash back in time to previous mechanisms for broadcast or mass communications, you've always had tremendously powerful players. And we called them gatekeepers because information flowed through their gates.
And you mean in the old days, big newspapers or the television networks, you name it.
Yeah, or radio stations. And so they operated under a certain type of professional code, and they felt some sort of sense of obligation. Now, we know that they constantly fell short in fulfilling their obligations, and there were all sorts of problems with that old mechanism of gatekeeping. But there was a set of rules. And now when we look at something like this last election, I think what it broadly reflects is the way in which the system is highly commodified and where there really aren't any rules that govern the ethos of these big, powerful new gatekeepers. And data is actually – the last caller touched on the question of data, which I think is central to the way that we think about these companies more generally, which is that they've amassed these incredible troves of information about each and every one of us. That data is everywhere we've traveled on the internet. It's everything we've read. It's everything we've bought. And it's aggregated into this very comprehensive portrait of the inside of our minds, of our habits. And there are lots of people on the internet every day who are trying to and Facebook is kind of the leading example of this, who are trying to exploit that data for various sorts of ways to toy with our emotions in order to influence our decisions. And so the nature of data is that it's so intimate, it's ours in some fundamental level, but it exists out there. And there are lots of good actors who are trying to exploit that information to accomplish their means. And there are lots of bad actors who are doing even worse with it.
We are looking at that right here, right now. You write, you go big with this, and you talk about not just Facebook and Google. You've got Amazon and Apple in here, and I want to ask how and why. But you say, look at these together. You write, they believe that they have the opportunity to complete the long merger. More than any previous coterie of corporations, you say the tech monopolies, and you call them monopolies, aspire to mold humanity into their desired image of it. They believe they have the opportunity to complete the long merger between man and machine to redirect the trajectory of human evolution. That seems to dwarf the complaints about election interference there, Franklin.
Yeah, those are small bean complaints. And really, what I did when I was researching this book is I spent a long time listening, watching YouTube videos of Larry Page, the co-founder of Google, or Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook. And I listened to all the things that they said. And so they say a lot of things about whatever the new phone is or the latest platform, and those get a lot of attention. But they also say profoundly interesting things about human nature and about the human species. And so if you listen to somebody like Larry Page, he says that human beings are more or less piles of algorithms. We are code. And therefore, it's not a stretch to imagine that we need to become cyborg.
We're predictable, like a piece of code in a way.
Exactly. But also, if you were to reduce human biology, you would see that it functions essentially as the equivalent of code. And therefore, we're machines. And so, to merge with machines is really just a natural thing. And so, some of this is happening already. We wear Apple watches on our wrist. You could wear Google Glass on the bridge of your nose. And Sergey Brin has talked about the day when Google will be implanted in your brain. And right now, if you listen to Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk, they talk about the potential of actually creating machines that read human brains so that we don't need to type into our phones. We could just send brain waves that have the effect of communicating with machines. And so I know it sounds kind of grandiose to describe these companies in this sort of way, but really, I'm not doing anything more than reading back the things that they themselves say.
Wow, you really go after them. You say the big tech companies are shredding the principles that protect individuality. Their devices and sites have collapsed privacy. They disrespect the value of authorship, hostile to intellectual property. They justify monopoly. When it comes to the most central tenet of individualism, free will, the tech companies have a different way. They hope to automate our choices, the choices that we make. As we float through the day, you say it's their algorithms that suggest the news we read, the goods we buy, their algorithms, the path we travel, the friends we invite into our circle. That is such a vast, if that's the way you see it, that seems almost beyond regulation, Franklin.
I'm not sure it is. I mean, I think that there are two ways that we could really begin to address the power of these companies that really isn't radically inconsistent with the approach that we've taken throughout American history to dealing with these types of communication behemoths. The first thing is that there really isn't any law in this country protecting data. Now, if I've just described data as being this X-ray of your soul, this very, very intimate document of your past, it's really kind of gobsmacking that we don't have basic protections for that, or even a basic paradigm for understanding who this data actually belongs to. Lots of countries around the world have gotten into the business of regulating data, of creating data protection agencies. So there's a lot that we could use as a model for creating something similar here. The second thing is that we have this grand tradition in our country of anti-monopoly laws, and they've fallen into a bit of disuse over the course of the last several decades. But those laws are there. They need to be updated to take into account some of the different ways in which these companies function. But again, this is just entirely consistent with our history, that we've had these monopolies in the past. The Postal Service was, in fact, the first communications monopoly. And we constrained the Postal Service when it was tempted to get into the telegraph business. And then when a monopoly got into the telegraph business, Western Union, we again created pressure where they feared nationalization. And so they were reluctant to get into the telephone business and so on down through the generations. Until you get to the case against Microsoft that actually scared Microsoft at a time when Google was emerging. And I've talked to a lot of people at Google, And they suggest that if the government hadn't acted against Microsoft, there wouldn't have been space for Google. So it's possible to regulate in a way that, in fact, encourages innovation.
Sometimes I feel like Americans enjoy these monopolies function. You know, it allows all kinds of kind of wild things to happen here. Maybe people are more into the efficiency or ease than into the protection of their data.
I enjoy these monopolies too, but I think the stakes are extremely high. And because our democracy is at stake, because our privacy is at stake, because our very the very definition of the human species is at stake, I think we need to proceed with extreme degrees of skepticism and care.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Washington weighing whether to rein in Silicon Valley tech giants, Facebook, Google, and beyond, on anonymous political advertising, and maybe one day much more, asking, are the tech giants running too much of our lives and minds? Franklin Foer is with us. His new book is World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. He says that his book is about the ideas that fuel these companies and the imperative of resisting them. We're hearing what he means. You can join us. Do you want these companies free to monitor and power so much? Do you buy their vision that their domination will set us free in a way, their ubiquity? And what's the right way to look at the power of these tech giants? Adam Thier joins us in just a moment. Just before he does, Franklin, lay out for us, if you would. All right, you say that maybe oversight or requiring disclosure on who's buying political ads online, you'd be for that. But you've got a much bigger picture of regulation you'd like to see. Give us a sense of what you think might be good.
You know, ultimately, I think that these companies have amassed so much power in our democracy, that they stand between us and information, that they shape our reality, and soon they'll be shaping our virtual realities. And they've acquired just massive amounts of control over markets, over kind of this idea of what floats to the top and what sinks, both in our economy, but also in public conversation. And at a certain point, I think that there are pretty sound economic reasons as well as sound democratic reasons for considering splitting these companies up. And I don't mean that in the extreme sort of way. I don't think that we need to necessarily take a hammer to them and bash them to bits. But if you look at what the Europeans are doing with Google right now, the Europeans have had a stronger instinct than us about the dangers posed by these companies, and they've kind of groped towards a solution for them.
Is that your number? You go beyond regulation right away? It's break them up or regulate within their current structure, or what?
Well, there's a problem that I have with some of the solutions that are being considered. Mm-hmm. One of the primary metaphors that we use is that these are utilities. And if they're utilities, then, well, why shouldn't we regulate them as we regulate the electric company or the water company? And I think we have to remember that these are different sorts of companies because they're public squares, because they're trading in information. And so do we really want the state involved in setting rules for these companies when, in effect, the state would be would be setting rules about what's important and what's not important? And I'm not really very comfortable with that. But when you look at what the Europeans are doing with Google, they've said, okay, Google has incredible power with its search engine to decide what's important and what's not important. But they're also making money off of those decisions by selling advertising against it. And so what the Europeans have done is that they've tried to sever Google's search business from its ad sales business, which is not to say that Google couldn't run a highly profitable search business, but it's to say that by tethering these two functions together, Google has amassed way too much power, and our instinct should be to pull that apart. Because what we really want to do is that we really want to create space for competition. Capitalism requires a flourishing of many different poles of power. But what we see right now is a tremendous concentration of it in these four companies.
Franklin Foer's new book is World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. And you hear it's regulation, or more than that, busting up some of these very big companies right now. I want to turn and welcome as well Adam Thier. He's a fellow with the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, author of the book out last year, Permissionless Innovation, The Continuing Case for Comprehensive Technological Freedom. Adam Thier, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Nice to be back.
You hear Franklin Foer's argument. There's just too much concentration of power. There's a vision here that's too invasive. It's a threat to our political system right now, and some legislators are certainly talking that way, and may one day be a threat to some, to things even more central to our individuality. He says it's time to get in there and think about monopoly, think about regulation. What do you say, Adam?
Well, Tom, look, it's always important to have some historical perspective when debating fears about tech titans, because in many ways we've heard this story before. And let's just start by rewinding the clock to, say, a dozen years or so, or maybe 15 years back. Yeah. In the social networking world, MySpace completely dominated, and Facebook was still not a major force. In the media world, people were still wringing their hands about what we're going to do about AOL Time Warner. In the computer world, it was Microsoft that had everybody worried. In smartphones, it was BlackBerry, Motorola, Nokia that completely dominated. Mm-hmm. People thought it was a joke that Google and Apple would get in the sector and fight in the phone business. And then, oh yeah, we hadn't even heard of the sharing economy or firms like Uber, Airbnb, and Lyft.
Yeah.
All of this and more has unfolded within just the last dozen years, which signals how strong competition and ongoing churn has been within these sectors. And so whenever you hear these stories about, like, oh my gosh, these tech titans, just go back and take a page out of history and look at how we viewed these folks in the past, and it's always going to be the exact same story again and again.
So you're not worried. Let's just take the push on Capitol Hill right now to say, well, let's at least have disclosure of who's buying ads on Facebook and Google, the same as we have in newspapers and TV and radio. What about that, Adam?
Oh, sure, we should always be worried about market power, but let's remind our listeners that we have plenty of remedies to these problems, and maybe disclosure ads are part of it, and maybe, as Franklin suggested, antitrust might be a part. But let's step back and remember that when we talk about antitrust regulation, the standard of review is consumer welfare. And how do we judge consumer welfare? By three variables: price, quality, and quantity. Well, what's the current situation with prices? Most information services are cheap or falling or even free to consumers. In terms of quality, we live in the golden age of media. And in terms of quantity, we have more choices than from across the world than ever before. In fact, we used to complain in the world of media and technology policy about the problem of information scarcity and what we were going to do about it. Today, we complain about the problem of information overload. That's a good problem to have, if you ask me.
Franklin, what do you say? It's the best of all possible worlds.
Well, I think the quality of our democracy right now begs to differ, as well as the extreme threats to privacy. And, you know, we can look back at these past companies, and we can that Adam has described, and we can say
MySpace, AOL, BlackBerry.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well for us over the long run. That the government took a light footprint during those periods, but there was nothing remotely like what we're seeing with the concentration that exists in these handful of companies. I don't know if you saw there was a story in the New York Times about the salaries that are being offered to people who work in the AI space. And, you know, what happens in our economy right now is that we're not actually seeing a whole lot of productivity. We're not seeing a whole lot of startup companies emerge on the scene. What we're seeing is that startups that do spring up desire to get consumed by these four big companies. We're seeing that these companies offer such high salaries to the top talent because they're sitting on top of monopolistic rents, and they're using their huge piles of cash to basically hoard talent. So the talent that might produce the challenger that would dislodge one of these companies now exists within these four companies. And the levels of concentration are just so immense that I think they've reached the point where we can't say we're just repeating innocuous past antecedents, that we're entering into a dangerous new phase.
Adam, we'll look at that. Let me get a call here from Washington, D.C. Travis is calling. Hi, Travis. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. You know, I'm listening to the discussion here, and I tend to agree with what the gentleman who's just wrote the book has said. You know, the reason we didn't have this issue in 2012 or 2008
You mean the political problems? The problems with the
exactly the
factual
election
information
sort of socially engineered.
Mm-hmm.
There's we've gotten so concentrated, and the internet used to be more pluralistic and open. In the past, it would have been too large and diverse to manipulate an election, and now it just seems like we're fish in one of two information barrels. And it's easier to shoot at when you've only got two barrels.
You're talking Facebook and Google when you say that. Mm-hmm. So what's exactly the solution, Travis?
Well, I think the calls for antitrust enforcement make sense. But I also think, on the topic of disclosure, I'd be interested to hear if any of the guests today have received any payments in the past from any of these monopoly companies like Google or Facebook.
Well, I mean, Franklin Foer worked for one of the early employees of Facebook who ultimately fired him at the New Republic, Franklin. You're right, because you weren't going fast enough down the path he wanted to see that publication go. Any other emoluments here, Franklin? Yeah,
in fact, yes, which is I worked for a think tank called the New America Foundation, which received money from Google chairman Eric Schmidt. And if we were to kind of look at a case study of the dangers of these companies, it's just the way in which they've become so pervasive and so concerned about shaping the future of democratic discourse. And it ended very badly at the New America Foundation, where the pressure that Google put on New America caused New America to eject Barry Lin in the Open Markets program, which had been highly critical of Google. So the money is sloshing around everywhere, and it's a danger.
Adam, I'll ask you about the bust-em-up view, but what about the financial connections? It's interesting. So we're talking about disclosure. Financial connections to these companies, Adam?
I have no idea how much money any of these companies give to my organization. My organization has about 1.9% corporate funding overall. We get most of our support from foundations and individuals. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I wouldn't be on talking about these issues if someone was paying me to. I'm here because I actually passionately believe in what I'm saying, and I write books about this. Mm-hmm. Because I think what Franklin is proposing is extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, we need to talk about the radicalism of what he's saying when he says in this conclusion of his book that, quote, we're nearing the moment when we will have to damage one of our revolutions to save the other. He means to say that we need to throw a wrench in the works of the information revolution and all the benefits that it's given us to go back to some mythical good old days when, by the way, democratic discourse and campaign corruption issues were alive and well. I mean, do we forget about William Randolph Hearst and the age of yellow journalism? Do we forget about all the complaints we used to have about Rupert Murdoch on one hand and every other tech mogul and media mogul under the sun before? Nothing is new under the sun about these complaints, and I would argue that in those good old days, they were pretty bad for most of us because all we had were local media monopolies force-feeding us a handful of information options, and we didn't have the world at our disposal like we do today from all of these tech companies and others.
Adam, do you not see in the remarkable capacity of the technologies that these companies have rolled out the potential to change the dynamic in a way that Franklin sees as disturbing? I mean, this is not just your father's Oldsmobile.
Or is it? I mean, or is it something better? Because the reality is those old media platforms could dictate to us almost straight propaganda compared to today's information platforms and sources, which are constantly being checked by other sources and venues and individuals. The reality is the very fact that Franklin talks about Google, Apple, Facebook, and Amazon and others as quote-unquote monopolies, it kind of flies in the face of common sense. I mean, the fact of the matter is all four of them can't be monopolies because they compete against each other in various ways and against other folks. And then he conveniently forgets all of the giants that are out there in other sectors nibbling at their toes. I mean, even giants like Microsoft, who barely deserve any mention in Franklin's book.
Franklin, I mean, are you pining for a time of a perfect time that never was?
Well, first of all, I think Mercatus does have, it at least has Google fellows, and I think it's taken money in the past from Google. At least if you look at Mercatus's Wikipedia page, it's been a controversy in the past. But I don't say that your opinion stems from them, just that there is a ubiquity of money that is flowing through the system right now, and that needs to that needs to be accounted for in the way that we talk about this these companies. And I don't think that I am calling for a return to the good old days. I do think that there's certain institutions that I believe are worth preserving, and that once they disappear, they're probably not coming back. And so if something like privacy were to disappear, it's not going to get reconstituted again. Once it's gone, it's gone. And I don't think that we need to treat these things as such an all or nothing proposition, where it's either they get the run of the field and they're completely unregulated and their power is just left to the marketplace, or that we need to return to becoming hunter gatherers. I mean, I think we can accept technology, we can embrace technology, but we can also help guide it. And again, it's like the automobile. We need to set some basic rules. There needs to be a basic data protection regime put in place, because we shouldn't allow these companies to trade our data on the open market. We shouldn't allow them to leverage the collection of our information in such a way that allows them to become monopolistic. On the question of whether they're monopolies or not, it's true that these companies do compete against one another in certain areas. But I think if we look within their realms, that if, you know, Amazon's grip on retail, Google's grip on the search business, Facebook's grip on social media, I think you could see that there is there's something they've acquired a kind of iron lock on these sectors that is the fundamental basis for their businesses.
Adam, do you foresee trust challenges to these companies at some point, maybe even soon?
Well, there's already been challenges. There's already been some investigations. But what Franklin's suggesting is that why can't we all just be more like Europe and the United States? Well, let's take a look at what Europe's regulatory regime has done for technology companies. Can you name any leading information technology providers emanating out of the European continent today? I struggle too. I ask this to crowds everywhere I go, including in Europe, and they say all American companies. America's tech companies are household names across the globe because we didn't go down the over-regulatory sort of media control path that Franklin's recommending in his book. That would be a huge detriment to American competitiveness and consumer choices in this field.
Franklin, is this issue going to go away?
No, it's not. We're just in the earliest days of these questions being considered. This legislation about Russian interference is just the beginning. It's just the beginning of an awakening to the power that these companies have amassed in our democracy.
Here's a debate I think you can expect to hear more of, but it's hot right now on the political front. I want to thank the two of you for being with us today. Adam Thier, author of Permissionless Innovation, the continuing case for comprehensive technological freedom. Adam, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And Franklin Foer, author of the new book, World Without Mind, The Existential Threat of Big Tech. You can read a very interesting excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Franklin, thanks for being with us. Good to have you
again. Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.